insane, filth, treacherous vermin. I shall school them by the power of God. He lunged at me, seizing my arm, and dragged me after him. Come! Oh, come and see how I teach them to squeal for food while my faithful soldiers are starving.
It was news to me that they were starving, but I didn't mention that. He was bawling for his guards, hauling me out of the pavilion, hurling Samuel out of his path, and rushing on, brandishing his sword. I'd no choice but to run with him, for his grip was like a vice on my arm, and I'd no wish to resist and have him decapitate me.
Guards! Guards!
He kept shouting.
Attend me! To the stables!
They came running out of the dusk from the tents, and behind me I heard Rassam's voice demanding to know what was up, and Samuel begging him to go back to his tent and keep his companions under cover. I'd have given a pension to join them, but Theodore urged me on, vowing vengeance on the villains who dared to disturb his leisure. There was a squall of rain, I remember, just as we reached the stable buildings near the edge of the Islangi cliff, and a rumble of thunder overhead.
"Bring them out!" bawls Theodore. "Let us see these pampered animals. Have them out, I say."
He let go my arm at last, yelling at me out of a face that seemed to have lost all human expression. He was like a demented ape, spraying spittle and gibbering at me.
"You'll see, you'll see."
A guard drew the bar from its sockets and flung open the double doors, and a chained woman, bent double, stumbled out into the half-light. Theodore ran forward, shrieking curses, and brought down the sabre in a sickening cut that fell between neck and shoulder and almost severed the arm. The woman fell, screaming, blood spurting up in a fountain, and as a second prisoner blundered out, Theodore buried the sabre in his skull. It snapped with the force of the blow, and the fellow sank dead with the foible embedded in his brow, leaving the bloody truncheon of the sword in Theodore's hand. He glared at it, mouthing incoherently, and raised it to slash his next victim, a naked boy of about 5 who came running out, howling with his fists screwed into his eyes. Stricken horrified as I was, I thought, that'll sober him, the beastly lunatic. And indeed, he did throw the bloody shard of the sabre away, but he screamed an order at the nearest guard, and the brute seized the child and hurled him wailing over the cliff. That was how it began. The horror in the twilight at Islangi. But it got worse. For with that ghastly infanticide, his mad rage seemed to cool, and I thought, that ends it. But I was wrong. He continued his hellish extermination of the prisoners with a calm deliberation that was infinitely more terrible than his murderous fury. Killing in a frenzy is at least to be understood. But what can you say of one who, in level tones, inquires of a poor devil his name and offence, and on being answered, almost idly condemns him to be flung to his death? That is what Theodore did to 200 prisoners in the next 2 hours. Asked thus,
"What is your name and country, and why are you here?"
"Mariam, great abbayat of Magdala. I only laughed with my friend Zaudi, your page."
"Away with him."
So, Mariam was flung down 200 feet, and a moment later Zaudi followed him, condemned because he'd handed Theodore a musket that had misfired. You may think I'm inventing horrors to freeze your blood, but look in Blanc and Rassam and you'll find its simple truth. He sat on a rock, like the chairman of governors at a prize-giving, mad as a hatter, and as each unfortunate was dragged out, there was the same ritual of question, answer, and execution, with musketeers being sent down the cliff to finish off any survivors. Some went begging and screaming. A few flung defiance at him. Others went sheep-like, without protest. 2 young lads, I remember, were thrown over because their father had taken liberties with one of the royal concubines. But when the man himself was hauled out, Theodore had him unchained and let go. That was the folly of it. No sense, no logic, no reason, and the lousy bastard didn't enjoy it, or even care. He just killed them. And I watched, and marvelled, and found myself hoping that Arnold was right, and that there was a hell for him. Blanc says 307 were thrown down, and 91, all rebel chiefs and his deadly enemies, were reserved for slaughter another day. Rassam puts the total of dead at 197, of whom he says only 35 had committed any crime, the rest having broken cups or lost rifles or laughed, like Mariam, or been the sons of a flirtatious father. I take Rassam's figure as more likely, but I was too stunned to keep count. I don't even know why he stopped. Probably because he was